whether you are dealing with outside agencies or your own fire brigades, pre-planning and exercises at your sites to prove your plans is key. It can be challenging with the various models in which we operate.
Hello and welcome to Knox and Friends. Since 1975, Knox has successfully developed innovative rapid access solutions for first responders and fire and life safety professionals with products that provide fast, safe, and secure entry into commercial, industrial, educational, and residential properties, all while minimizing damage and maximizing safety. Today, more than 15,000 fire, EMS, and law enforcement departments, as well as schools, universities, and corporations, depend on Knox products to gain access into over 1 million properties. The latest electronic advancements from Knox, specifically the eKey, Key Defender Key Retention System, and Mortis and SFIC lock retrofit products that are compatible with the eLock system, have opened up new opportunities for Knox to expand beyond fire departments. In fact, an increasing number of commercial businesses are realizing that the Knox eLock system can provide significant benefits within their safety and security framework. As Knox expands beyond its traditional customer base, we realize we didn't fully know or understand the challenges that security and fire and life safety professionals face on a daily basis. So we put together an advisory forum and invited some experts from commercial and industrial businesses located around the country. One of the attendees was Jeremy Morse. Jeremy is the Global Fire Protection Manager for Dow Chemical Company in Midland, Michigan. Jeremy has been with Dow for more than 20 years and is responsible for working globally with plants, project teams, businesses, and joint venture partners. He's also served as Dow's Senior Emergency Service and Security Specialist, and he recently retired from the Saginaw Township Fire Department, where he was a firefighter and assistant chief for 20 years. Jeremy, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for the opportunity, Neil. It's been a while since we had a chance to actually hang out, and it's great to catch up with you again.
Absolutely. Looking forward next time we could hang out. And hopefully we'll hang out in Michigan. You know, we always like to get to know the person we're speaking with a little better. You live in Michigan, which is my home state, by the way, and hopefully the Detroit Lions won't let us down this year. But have you always lived in Michigan and the Midland area?
Yeah. You know, I really hope that the Lions do come through this season. I might even get some tickets for the boys and I. But yeah, I've always lived in Michigan. I grew up and graduated in Bridgeport, Michigan, just outside of Frankenmuth. I stayed local for college and graduated from Saginaw Valley State University. During college, I bought my first home in Saginaw Township. I never left. And to this day, I've been here 20 plus years. Currently, my wife, Rebecca, and I reside in Saginaw Township with our three sons, Parker, Tyler, and Andrew.
Awesome. So you graduate, you buy your house. And what led you to a career in the fire service?
That's a funny story, Neil. For the longest time, I thought the firefighters were crazy. Who runs into burning buildings when everyone else runs out? I was going to school at the time to become a police officer. And I remember working at the gates for Dow as a gate officer through co-op program. And I'd see firefighters rushing out of the gate to go to these fires from the smoke in the distance for Midland Township. And I was like, they are absolutely nuts. When I was first hired into Dow full time, that I had to be required to become a, you know, fire brigade trained. I fell in love with it. We were in training in Sarnia, Ontario, at the college there, and it was with an interior prop. I had flames shooting over my head, you know, embers were falling down, landed on my coat and caught my attention. I came home, wanted to learn more. So I joined the local fire department there. And then eventually that was right locally by my parents' house at the time, because I was still living at home. That was Buena Vista. Then when I bought my house, I joined Saginaw Township, and then through Dow and joined the local fire department, I had opportunities to grow and receive additional training, but Dow ultimately created this fire nerd.
I unfortunately have never been a fire nerd. I've always worked on the manufacturer side, but in my next life, I hope to be a fire nerd myself. So tell us a little bit about Dow. What products does Dow make and industries does it serve?
You know, that's a tough question. Dow is huge, and until you really understand it, but the boilerplate of the stuff, you know, you look at Dow is everywhere. We have products that they combine chemistry, biology, and physics. You know, they create innovative products in markets all over. We provide forward thinking and innovation to markets all around the globe with solutions that are essential to the human progress. We cover building, construction, infrastructure, chemical manufacturing, mobility, even dealing with cars, and then like certain release liners for like labels, as well as beauty and personal care. Some of our top products include polyolefin, polyurethanes, elastomers, conductive materials, and silicones. But ultimately, you look at a product and there's always something interesting to know about that, you know, and as businesses get spun off or we take on new businesses, we constantly are getting into the various different markets. And it's very interesting, especially when you have kids. You can say, hey, you see this adhesive right here, that's made by Dow, or your part of your clothing that you're wearing right now has a Dow product in it. And it's very cool to see that happen.
So you work for a diversified company, and I'm sure your job is very diversified as well. So take us through a typical day or week so we better understand the challenges you face.
You know, my role is a global role where I interact with all employees within the company. I could be working with an operator or an activity coordinator at the plant, all the way to mega projects with outside engineering firms trying to determine the best level of protection for our assets and our employees. It really changes every day. And that's what I love about the job, because it's not just coming in and doing the same thing. Every day is a different question, interacting with the different levels of the company. There's times I'm working, like I said, with the plant operation. And then the next thing, I'm working with our R&D personnel to figure out how we're going to protect an asset, because they're coming up with a new creative experiment to do and develop new products. So it's very interesting. It's challenging just because it's global. I have to be around, you know, many different codes, many different standards. And then in each region, it changes up. So it gets challenging, but it never stops. It's either fire protection, fire detection, life safety, access control. It's everything. And that's what I like about the job, because it's so diverse.
So a popular question we always like to ask is, what keeps you up at night? And we're not talking about barking dogs, but when it comes to fire and life safety, is there anything that keeps you up at night?
Well, at the moment, firefighting foam transition with PFAS containing foam to fluorine free foam is what keeps me up at night. But that could easily cover a couple podcast episodes. The transition to fluorine free foam is complex, but not impossible. We're doing a lot of testing with our ES&S team, and we're making great progress. But you know, it's just unique because, again, as my job's global and Dow's global, we have multiple plants and regions all over the globe, and each region is very challenging in how they're managing PFAS or their different regulations and different timelines. So right now, that's what's keeping me up at night, is the whole PFAS firefighting foam transition.
Yeah, you can't really go to an industry event without hearing people talking about it. Now it's quite the topic. So you have experience in both the public sector and the private sector. Obviously, there are differences in each sector. And like you just said, we could probably do an entire podcast or two just on this topic. But what are some of the biggest differences when it comes to fire and life safety between the two sectors?
You know, I think in my role, like I said, dealing with the different various regions around the globe and the different fire and building codes, that can be a challenge. But at the same time, there are a lot of times they're relatively similar. And as you see different regions actually implement NFPA codes, it's getting easier because they're similar and they're improving their life safety. But you know, what I see challenging is when we do protecting an industrial process, it's just different from a actual building code or fire code. You take different strategies to protect not only the process, but the employees and the asset, but the community itself. There's multiple ways to make protection levels and get there. And trying to get everybody on the same page and do the right things can be challenging. And sometimes, you know, it's language barriers, but that we usually get through that. We've gotten very creative with some different things. You know, one region will call it a fire hydrant. And what a fire hydrant we see, like Neil, is in the United States, is a fire hydrant right outside, you know, on the side of the road where your fire truck connects. For the longest time, one of the regions kept saying fire hydrants. It's actually a standpipe. They call it a fire hydrant, a standpipe in a building that you connect a hose for stairwells and stuff. So that can be very challenging, trying to get in there, but usually trying to get the industrial process. And a lot of times our businesses, you know, have sister plants in different regions. So when you have one building process that was built over in Europe and you try to mirror that in the United States, that challenge of the business wants to just drop it in, but the codes are different and how you apply it. Or maybe it was an open structure in Europe, but now it is going to be enclosed because it's going to be outside of Chicago and got to deal with Chicago winters. That changes the ball game and changes your protection layers. And that can be a challenge there just to make sure you get in front of it, so that's not a big surprise for the business.
You know, a lot of the folks I've met like yourself who work now in the private sector are former firefighters. And I imagine working for the Saginaw Township Fire Department helped you in your private sector role. Is that accurate to say?
It definitely did. I have a lot to thank for my former fire chief, Jim Peterson. He was an amazing mentor. you know, he helped support and advance my training as well as all of my NFPA certifications. He also provided leadership guidance as I transitioned to various officer roles and as I climbed in the Dow Chemical Company. I mean, he dealt with a lot. I mean, I was an up-and-coming officer, you know, just straight from firefighter climbing up, and he was always there to make sure my head fit through the door and I was making the right decisions. And he gave me a lot of strategies on how to make decisions and where we should go for training next. But he also, he helped me network outside of the department, even from a local department and outside of Dow at a state and national level, which in turn helped Dow as well as myself eventually. You know, I got involved with the State Fire Safety Board representing the Chemical Industry Board, but he was one of the ones that was intrinsic for that. I also have gotten involved with PFAS at the state level just because Chief Peterson recommended I'd be a good addition to the teams. Even after he retired, he reaches out to see how things are going and checking on me. We grab breakfast now and then, catch up, which I greatly appreciate, but it's always good having that sounding board and, you know, having that supporter from Saginaw Township Fire Department, Jim Peterson, definitely helped my career, especially with the certifications and the networking to keep advancing. And not only that, but professionally, how to manage in a diverse work group.
And, you know, you wear a lot of hats, you have a lot of roles, you're a father, husband, your role at Dow and being a full-time fire nerd. But you're also the vice chairman of NFPA's Industrial Fire Protection Section. Tell us about that section some. Who should be a member? What are some of the important topics the section is currently working on? And whatever else the listeners may want to hear.
Yeah, this is another one we could probably do a couple podcasts on. When I first got interested in this role for Global Fire Protection and I started going to the NFPA conference, another key player in my development, Mike Snyder, who was Dow Corning, now works for DECRA, invited me to the Industrial Fire Protection section and said, this is key. You have to do it. And then I went to it and, you know, we have a lot of development there with our representation around codes and standard development. If you are industrial, chemical, or a manufacturer, you should join. The networking and relationships that are made are extremely valuable. And then we also do a lot of things as an Industrial Fire Protection section. We sponsor individuals through the section on various NFPA technical committees that represent a strong interest in our industry. For example, like NFPA 30, flammable and combustible liquids codes, is very popular with many industries across the board, whether your cars, your General Motors, Nextier, Dow, BSF, you name it. But we have a lot of impact on our membership that way. And we have a few members on those various committees to keep an eye on what may be changing or what is being proposed in these technical committees. And those individuals bring that information back to the section to highlight proposals, changes, and create industry awareness. That way we can stay in front of it. Because just like myself or another role in another company, it's hard to keep track of all of the trends and all the transitions and changes and proposals going through NFPA when you have your own job to actually watch. There, you know, it's advocacy, but we do it as a team and it helps break it down, you know. And we've seen some areas where this came beneficial, and then we saw areas where we're like, man, if we had somebody on that technical committee, we would have caught that earlier and we probably could have fought that change, because that change doesn't make sense from an industry perspective. So we've done a really good job as a team. The board and a few key players in that team has actually developed the process. And it's this year we started rolling with it and had actually at this year's meeting in Vegas, we actually presented what people thought and saw and what they saw for changes just to bring that awareness up. So it was good.
So if someone wanted to get involved with the NFPA Industrial Fire Protection section, what advice do you have? What steps do they need to take?
You know, anytime they can always reach out to myself or, you know, anybody from NFPA. But after you become a member of NFPA, it's real easy. You have the opportunity to join 11 different member sections, and you can join all of them. You can join one or you can join none. But from your profile, you just go to click My Engage Membership and select Join for Industrial Fire Protection. And then you'll start getting on the mailing list. And also the exchange group has a small Industrial Fire Protection section group that people use. But what I've learned is if you ever get a chance to go to the NFPA conference and expo, you can always reach out and meet everyone at the business meeting over a lunch break. A lot of times, if you want to get involved and learn what the executive boards, you can get invited to the executive board meeting for the Industrial Fire Protection section as well. But the big one is just come to the meeting, get free lunch, and meet everybody in the industry that's similar to you. It's a great opportunity for it. There's usually a good discussion, and usually everybody's sticking around networking afterwards. Those are the first steps to get involved, but you know, the networking that you get out of that is huge and pays dividends down the road.
Yeah, I attended the luncheon at the NFPA convention. It was pretty interesting. It was my first event, and I learned quite a bit. So I can only imagine if you get involved, what else you can learn from being in that section. You know, I also want to thank you once again for attending the Knox Commercial Business Advisory Forum we held earlier this year in Phoenix. And as I said in my opening, we at Knox didn't really have a grasp of the security access emergency management challenges that folks like you face. So I'm going to ask you a few questions about access. First, when it comes to protecting critical assets at a company like Dow, what are some of the key challenges?
You know, as an industry, Dow has grown with industry improvements with access control. I started Dow over 23 years ago, you know, and a lot of that was still your physical key and lock to get into buildings. And then you saw proximity card access getting into more doors. And then I even seen biometrics at certain areas. When I've talked to my industry friends, and also when we kind of just brainstorm where we see issues around things, you know, I see issues with access, like around turnarounds. We have a lot of people on site, a lot of material. There's a lot of risk there. And then these mega projects where they're huge, you know, in different countries or in the Gulf Coast. And then more recently, which is not just a Dow thing, but is this iPark setting where it is, you know, a fence line of a variety of different companies within one fence line that are working and using the same infrastructures and feeding off of each other. That gets really complex, and it's a big challenge, because you might have five different companies or just two different companies, but you still have your own security and access you want to control at certain points. You know, you got proprietary information. It could be a safety related issue or some value of material there. You want to keep that locked down. So over the years, it's changed. And then it's not even the locks. It's the environment that it's changing. The iPark setting has been huge. You'll see that even with major like lab buildings. You'll see, I was down at Michigan State University the other day, and I was following up on a company that we're working with and talking to. And there was five different companies in this one building sharing all these different wings. I was sitting there access, you know, that everybody's running really lean, you know, they didn't have somebody at the front desk, but it's like, okay, how is access controlled here? Where do you go here? How do I get into this place here? Is this really secure? Where do I go? It's the environment's always changing, and it constantly makes it a challenge for any company or anybody that's dealing with access control to keep evolving.
Yeah, and obviously you also have to make sure that emergency responders have the access they need when they need it. And we've seen the growth of the active shooting incidents, for example. How do you ensure that first responders have that access when they need it?
You know, that's a very good comment about the emergency responders needing the access. And whether you are dealing with outside agencies or your own fire brigades, pre-planning and exercises at your sites to prove your plans is key. It can be challenging with the various models in which we operate, especially with these iParks or assets with no external fence line. But you got to work closely with those responders to understand needs, capabilities, and what they're updating. You know, I think when I learned quite a bit from the advisory forum from across the board, from the different commercial businesses and contacts we had there about the different challenges and how, you know, you might have a fire department that's outside that's actually taken off and using the newer technologies for access, but the companies that are there are not. They're still in the old lock and key, and usually in one key, and have the old Knox box there, which is still fine and it still works today if you keep it up. And again, the pre-planning exercise is key for that. You got to keep everything up to date. You know, I, from my outside agencies, from outside of Dow, being on the municipal side, and even when I visited other departments out of Michigan, when I visited some friends that are on fire departments there, you know, one of the key things was you go to a Knox box. The Knox box is great, but when the tenants changed or the keys were not updated or they changed the locks because the door didn't, they may have forgotten to update that key. So, you know, those pre-planning exercises is key. I remember anytime we'd go with a walkthrough inside Saginaw Township, if there was a Knox box, quite often I'd ask one of the firefighters, get the Knox box key. We have the manager there. Let's try it to make sure it works. Make sure if there's a card access in there, make sure the card access is not damaged and it'll open the doors that we need to. And that's huge on tying the access to emergency responders. Is you can have all the technology, but you have to test it and you have to do pre-planning and exercise to make sure it's key.
That's a great point. And I think everyone will agree that knowing who has access to what is important. And some fire and life safety folks have to be concerned with remote sites, for instance, where security may be a little lax. Is auditing who has access to what parts of your facility and the various locked doors and gates a concern? And if it is a concern, how do you stay on top of all that?
Yeah, I think audits help complete your entire program in any department, whether it's security, emergency response, or safety. You can always find ways to improve, and you want, and one way to do that is to find those opportunities is do your audits. The audits can be simply quick checks or extensive and in depth to ensure we are keeping track of our access. When a company gets big, it's hard and expensive to go through and retrofit all one type system. So evaluating the risk and where one can use the value and see the value to adjust that new technology is always on the radar. You're always constantly looking at it. And when you, as you start to see more gaps, I think there's a variety of different audit plans. I know when, we talked about my 23 years at Dow. I'm currently in the Emergency Services and Security Expertise Center. This is the third time I've been in this department. And I still remember when I first left, you know, I had security access, just like normal access to anywhere I wanted to. And when I was in EH&S, I was delivering a sample to a building, and I knew we'd go there all the time, and I couldn't get in. And I was like, wait a minute, my badge is not working for proximity. Why is it not working? And it was part of our internal program. You know, they saw that I left security, so they knew what I needed access to, and they have different layers, and it went down. And it was funny because I have friends that stayed in ES&S, and it's just different, you know, because they have their own programs and internal things to make sure people are going where they need to be, and then obviously different levels of protection.
Yeah, and thanks, Jeremy, for your time. This has been extremely interesting. Every time I do one of these podcasts, I learn a little bit more, but we've never had anybody from that commercial side come on and talk to us. So thanks for breaking that barrier. I also want to thank you for being a valuable sounding board for us at Knox as we continue to learn more about access and security needs of commercial and corporate businesses. So best wishes to you and to your team at Dow.
Thank you, Neil. It's been a great time.